This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
Back on The Suspects to open up hour number two of the three-hour show. It's Nick and myself today and tomorrow. And then someone on the text message asked about the new lineup and where we were going to be. We're going to be moving from 11 to 2 as kind of a hybrid yes. between Charlie's show and our show. It'll now be Nick, myself, and Charlie Pulillo from 11 until 2. So there will be the new slot, which is to start on Monday.
Correct.
FYI.
So tune in for that starting Monday. Yes.
Yep. So there you have that. Nick has mentioned, according to John Heyman and also Jeff Passan, Major League Baseball's target date to return is, as I said, early July. They're looking for like July 4th to be some form of symbolism, but that's the hope, far from a certainty. And anything that depends on that date is, again, as we just got done talking about, health concerns, testing availability, and all of the different security with the medical involved is going to have to be locked down. NFL hoping to get to the point, I believe, by early next week where they are accepting all of the different information right now and trying to finalize a plan to reopen their facilities to players and coaches. So they're working on that. I guess if you're just a sports fan and you're clamoring for sports, you can be optimistic and hopeful and just like the fact that they are at least strategizing to bring everything back. It's just that you have to pay attention to the fact that everybody has that caveat of saying, as long as we're good with the medical side of things, and we don't know when that's going to be. So.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of get this report. If you really read the report, it's just a proposal, and we don't know how this proposal is going to go down. I think, obviously, if they're initiating some sort of meeting like this with the MLB Players Association, and they're planning on doing this within a week, you know, there's something that's driving them to do so. What it is, whether, like I said in the last segment, it's something where they're probably getting desperate, or they just want the season to get going and get past things. So, the proposal is, you know, if it happens in a week and they have some sort of plan, the reason why it's going to be so iffy, like you mentioned, and you're so concerned, is because by the time spring training starts and by the time the regular season starts, you don't know what the virus has evolved to. You know, I mean, this is obviously a new virus. I don't think that, you know, it doesn't happen so very often that, you know, 60,000 people die or whatever the number is worldwide from a virus. So they don't know where this virus is going to be in 2 months, and that's why that's dangerous. And that's probably why it's at the status of just a proposal at this point. But I feel like if you're telling players, and it's not just coaches, it's executives, it's GMs, they're talking to their players. They're saying over a half a dozen executives, GMs, and coaches have instructed their players to get ready for spring training. So, I mean, it may be a sign. It may just be a report. But we'll see. We'll see how the virus evolves come June and July.
And that sidebar, the NBA is also going to have a players call tomorrow for all players in the league so that they can go through the different protocol as facilities are set to reopen. Again, I have checked with my folks over at Toyota Center. Doesn't look like they're going to be on this first, you know, bunch of teams that's going to try and do this and open up the doors and get players in. Three teams, the Blazers, Nuggets, and Cavs, have actually told ESPN that they will reopen tomorrow. Several other teams said they hope to do next week. Rockets, one of those teams. They had initially planned to open tomorrow, but they reconsidered as they looked like, from a gym standpoint as well and their facility standpoint as well as for a player safety standpoint, better to wait and be safe than sorry. That's all I'm talking about, Nick. That's my point. That's been my point this last discussion that we've just been having. As long as cooler heads prevail, and if they realize, hey, if there's anything in question, if we're bordering in any way, shape, or form on putting anybody in jeopardy, let's just wait. And I'm glad the Rockets are doing that.
I'm okay with that. Look, if you can wait and you can hold out, I mean, we were talking about Tillman Fertitta's empire being, you know, in question when that report came out that he was requesting a big loan at a ridiculous rate. But, you know, it's, you know, you have to understand each team is different and they're in a different status in terms of where their numbers are, and they have to make decision slightly different. So you're going to see some of these organizations and leagues slowly start to work their way in, and some people are going to be a little bit slower than others. But yeah, I mean, like you said, I totally agree with you. Make sure you take all the considerations before, you know, you go full force with any league or any of your players on your roster. And I don't know. They're going to have to collect. The problem is they're going to have to collect a lot of data on this. Like how many times people get sick. You know, there's going to be a lot of information gathering, in my opinion, for them to really know how to approach this right. Even for teams, not just like all the doctors that are facing the pandemic, but just in the teams alone are going to have to figure out their own little approach. I mean, they have to. They have to.
Yeah. Certainly do. Changing gears for one quick second, too. I had mentioned the Earl Thomas story. The other story that's getting a lot of run is LeBron James has responded and put some stuff out there on social media about the absolutely senseless killing of Ahmaud Arbery, to which Jason Whitlock chimed in, and there was a back and forth. Let me just be clear, and this is as far as this show has to go on this, but let's just be as clear as we can possibly be. Take the Whitlock and LeBron part of this and get rid of it and stop worrying about it and stop even thinking that it's something that needs to be discussed, because it's all BS and it pisses me off, because the bigger issue is the fact that this young man was jogging in his own neighborhood. And if you've seen the video, and if you haven't, don't come at me, but if you've seen the video and you see what happens and you see a father and a son take the law into their own hands, make huge assumptions that don't look to be anywhere near true, and take a man's life before his 30th birthday. I think he's 26. Absolutely ludicrous, ridiculous, and it's a travesty, and something has to be done about it. And that is the only issue that should be discussed here. Whitlock and LeBron and trying to take shots at one another, or Whitlock trying to poke holes in LeBron getting involved. No, stop doing all that. And focus on the real issue at hand here, because it's awful.
I saw the video. I didn't want to. I watched it twice because it's kind of the video that I saw kind of had a hard angle, and I didn't want to really want to keep watching it. But do we know? And I don't have the story in front of me. Maybe you don't either. I don't know. Obviously, this just happened. So does this look like the father and son are going to be held?
It was 10 weeks ago the shooting happened. Okay. Now the father and son, Greg McMichael. He used to work for the police department. They have not made an arrest because, in part, people think because he used to work for the police department. He and his dad said they shot him because they suspected he was a part of a string of burglaries in their neighborhood.
So?
Exactly.
You can't do that. You can't take the matter in your own hands. He didn't attack you. Unless he attacked him, if there was some other reason. Look, we don't have all the details, but I'm sorry. You know, if he came at your property, that's one thing. But to me, that's not a justifiable reason. You can't.
It's not. It's in the middle of daylight, too. This isn't a matter of when all of this stuff was going down and whatever had been happening in his neighborhood. This kid's 25 at the time. He's going out for a run in the neighborhood in broad daylight. This father and son come down the street in a pickup truck and swerve at him. When he tries to get out of the way, they're trying to actually roadblock him to stop in the road. So they swing the truck around and they pull out a gun and they kill him in cold blood. And it is ridiculously bad. There have no arrests that have been made 10 weeks later in the case. And if you watch the video, I don't know how in any way, shape, or form you can justify what the father and son did.
No, you can't. You can't. And I would have been, you know, if I was the one, I don't know who got the video, but I would have, and maybe the person who took the video did take the right steps and said, look, I just witnessed this and this is a video to prove it. I don't know if that was the case, but that's just super sad. 2-on-1 situation. Guy was just jogging. Super, super sad. And I think the little back and forth between LeBron and Whitlock is ridiculous.
It's absolutely, it shouldn't even be a story. It shouldn't even be an issue. And you're all about yourself and you're thirsty for attention if that's what you're trying to make this. Because the bigger issue should not be lost in all of this. And it needs to be focused on. And it needs to continually be focused on until justice is not only done here, but overall. Because this stuff has got to stop happening. And there, I've said it. But I wanted to make sure that point got across. Because I was tired of everybody just kind of analyzing the back and forth between Whitlock and LeBron and going, people, what are you doing not missing what the real story is here?
See, I figured you and Barry talked about this before on one of my days off.
No, with you. Did not.
So I just assumed you guys, I mean, this is definitely a Barry topic. You know, he would have probably.
Oh, for sure.
You know what I mean? So, but yeah, I mean, look, it's sad. I hope justice. I can't tell you how many times I've seen those videos. I mean, I'll never forget the South Carolina police officer. The guy was literally running away. And he
Sacramento,
shot him
too.
Back.
In Sacramento, the kid
and he
that
shot
was
him in
away.
His back. So, yeah. I mean, it look, these videos, that's the one good side of social media and videos and technology is that sometimes you can get this documentation and sometimes justice is served. We'll see if that's the case for Ahmed. It's going to be, we'll see. We'll see. And the fact that they're former cops, though, I can't tell you how much that helps them.
Oh, absolutely, because that's probably the majority of the reason why that they weren't prosecuted to this point. Mm-hmm. Now, the third prosecutor in the case, the district attorney for the Atlanta Judicial Court, said Tuesday he's going to submit the evidence to a grand jury once the state's coronavirus restrictions are lifted. So hopefully someone comes to their senses and puts it back out there. The video is accessible. You can find it. You can pass your own judgment, but I'm telling
it's all
you.
Over.
Yeah, just based on what you see and how many times you see it, I don't know how you can interpret it any other way than what we've just kind of put out there for you. So I didn't want to make sure we got that out there. We've got plenty of other sports stories and other things to get to as well, but that was something that was just chapping my ass, and I thought that we needed to get it out there.
Sure.
To talk about.
Did you see the story about Spirit Airlines and the fact that they had to make an emergency landing because a brawl happened?
On the
plane. So apparently there was this flight on Spirit from Los Angeles to Detroit, and then they were forced to make this emergency landing in Des Moines because there was a bloody brawl that broke out. Now, I wasn't of the belief that planes were at full capacity, but apparently this flight from Los Angeles to Detroit, there were quite a few people on that flight. So apparently, I mean, I would be 100 feet away from an airport right now, but apparently people have to fly. And now that everything that's slowly starting to get back up, you know, there's these flights are starting to fill. But not only were it was involved, it was a blood-soaked brawl. Three people were involved, okay? But two of them were allowed to stay on the plane, and the plane was still bloody.
How do you do that?
Yeah. So they only one of them was arrested because of like a jurisdiction thing. The other two stayed, and then everybody on that flight had to fly in a bloody plane until they got to Detroit. Crazy.
So but they said that a couple of the participants in the fight, the attackers that actually provoked the whole thing, went and changed their clothes before the marshals for the flight came. And witnesses said they hurried up, ran into the bathroom because they had blood all over their clothes. They didn't want to be recognized, washed up, changed clothes, and passengers were shocked that the people involved were allowed to board the flight. How do you do that? Yeah. We know for lesser things that we've seen, as you mentioned, social media. We know for lesser things, people being intoxicated on a plane.
Dude,
the
doctor got kicked out for the plane being overbooked. So, yeah. You know, I mean, but the fact that they let him back, I guess, like, jurisdiction is jurisdiction, I guess, but I wouldn't want to be on that flight with blood.
I mean, I don't want to be a passenger on that flight. I don't know how you allow people like that back on a flight, because until you get to the bottom of it, you don't know what all is involved. They might be high on something. They might be drunk for whatever reason. They might do it again. It's just, and like, I think you bring up a good point, but I think not enough people are aware of the fact that flights are going on daily. And they got this whole thing now where I want to say maybe it was Spirit, but one of the airlines was going to charge you $39 if you wanted to have an empty seat next to you. You had to pay for it. And they were basically billing it like a coronavirus prevention, but they were going to capitalize. And the local government stepped in at some point and said, no, time out.
You're
capitalizing
that?
on the coronavirus to try and make money by telling people if you pay $39, you can have a middle seat open between you and whoever else is in your row. And they're like, that's not going to happen. It's in your best interest to do it without charging them.
Yeah, but I can see how people who, you know, have to fly for whatever reason, business, essential workers, or even if they're just insisting on traveling because they want to travel, I would imagine that's a tempting purchase. I probably, like, if I was a guy that was an essential worker and I had to fly,
right,
I would pay the $39 for the extra seat. Honestly, it's just $40 though. Like if it was like an extra $200, I'd be like, no, not happy.
But my response to you would be, if the airline's doing what they're supposed to do.
No, and they're wrong. Yeah, they're wrong in charging,
and
obviously.
And if they want to be open for business and continue to operate, then they should be the ones taking the initiative to say, you know what, during the pandemic, we're going to do every other seat. We're going to have it, you know, some kind of system in place so that social distancing will be in place for all of our flights. Instead of just trying to maximize getting every fanny in every seat and saying, well, but if you want, like, kind of like first class, but if you want the extra amenities, in this case, having an open seat between you, you got to pay.
Yeah, one of the passengers on that particular flight, the Spirit flight that went from L.A. to Detroit, said they were asking why they weren't doing anything during the brawl, and the response was, quote, we don't get paid enough to deal with this. I kind of agree with them. I mean, they're on the flight serving you food and drinks and trying to take care of you. Like, do they have to get in the way of a fight or of a brawl, too? Like, is that fair to ask?
Yeah, I just think that anytime you're putting anybody in harm's way, that's an actual customer of yours, someone in your legal department that hears about this is going to go, yeah, let's not do that, okay? If there's any, if we're bordering at all in terms of passenger safety or anything, let's make sure those people are removed. We can always put them on another flight, and let's not put ourselves out there with a chance to be in bigger trouble. I just think it was a dumb decision.
And this all started because somebody was trying to go to sleep and two of the passengers were being too loud. So if you're flying and you're trying to go to sleep, or if you're on a flight and someone really wants to go to sleep, be careful because it might end up in a bloody brawl. That's crazy.
And it's all the things Nick mentioned. And if you listen to this station, don't put your seat back because if you do that, that can cause problems.
If you're a recliner,
too.
You're a terrible human being.
Yeah, just ask the Blitz. All right, we're going to continue to roll on here on the Nick and Joel version of The Suspects for the rest of the week. Lots more to get to, including your calls, your texts, your tweets, 713-780-3776, HRP listener line. You can also hit us up on Twitter. Before we go to break, though, I'm telling you, you got to go see my friends at Apollo Men's Health. They are absolutely fantastic. I went and checked back in with them Saturday. I'm going to go back there this weekend because they take care of you. You're in and out quickly. They make sure that you feel comfortable. They offer you beverages. They ask if you're comfortable waiting in the waiting room. If not, they'll let you wait back in an exam room. They're friendly. They talk to you, and they get down to basics to try and figure out exactly what's ailing you and how they can help. Everything that they do is centered around your health, quality of life, and making it better. They have body composition analysis that Nick and I were talking about, HGH peptide therapy to increase your overall quality of life. But most importantly, they have testosterone therapy, the traditional testosterone therapy, and they also have cutting-edge pellet testosterone therapy, which is like time-released. So that means it has the same results. You just don't have to go in as frequently, especially with everything going on with the coronavirus. You may not want to be traveling around town and stopping in as consistently. You don't have to if you try this new cutting-edge pellet testosterone therapy. Everything they do is centered around you because your health is your wealth. You should invest in yourself. All you can do to start the process, call them, 832-664-9966, or you can go to their website, apollomh.com, and book your first appointment online without having to even get in the car. They are going to be there for you in and out and throughout the process. Most major insurance accepted, discounts for military personnel and first responders. Give them a call. Tell them ESPN 97.5 sent you by Apollo Men's Health.
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. Looking to outsource your company's HR and payroll? Get the top initiative and smart solutions with HRP.net. You're listening to The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
Back on The Suspects, rolling through hour number two. 3-hour show. Nick and myself, today and tomorrow. Shane Battier going to join us in the 3 o'clock hour, which will be very cool to catch up with Shaner. Always a great dude. Shane was going to run.
You guys called him Shaner back in the day?
Yeah, I honestly called him Shaner.
Did teammates do that, or was that just you?
A lot of people did.
Okay.
Really one of the most personable guys you're ever going to meet. And it was funny because the big discussion was what he was going to do after he got done playing basketball. Because for a while there, everybody said, I mean, this guy is like the poster child for squeaky clean. I mean, intelligent, articulate.
Yeah, well,
and everybody thought he was going to, you know, one of his teammates was in the cabinet for Obama. I think it's Reggie King. And so everybody thought Shane's destined to be in politics. And I don't think he was against it. But Shane was also a guy that was heavily involved in all aspects of basketball. And it's weird because I mentioned he had this stellar college career. He was drafted in the first round. Didn't have the same kind of NBA career as he did in college. But the minute he got to the Rockets, he flourished. And part of the reason why was he was so entrenched with Daryl and analytics and how everything works and the thought process behind it and getting involved in all those aspects and trying to just surround himself with every bit of information that when his basketball career ended, it could have been politics, could have been broadcasting, it could have been coaching, it could have been the front office, and the Miami Heat ended up getting him. I think Daryl was interested in signing him and bringing him into the front office. He ended up going with the Heat. And he's still there in the front office. But he's a brilliant mind, and he's a great dude. He's a huge golf fan. We used to golf all the time. And it's just, I think a lot of Rockets fans are going to look forward to just kind of catching up with him and hearing what he's been up to and what's been going on, because he was a fan favorite when he was here. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, NCAA champion, two-time champion in the NBA with the Miami Heat. And one thing I remember about him was, I knew he wasn't a rookie when he became a Houston Rocket. I just assumed he was in the league longer. But when he became a Houston Rocket initially, he was only in the league for 5 years. Not to say that he wasn't experienced or he wasn't good, but I thought he was in the league longer. So to get him at that time, I think, was really good, because I believe he played five seasons with the Houston Rockets, and people absolutely loved him. I've never had
Well, and let me ask you this, because I remember we had a draft party in the building. The day that the trade was made was draft day. Rudy Gay was drafted in the first round by the Rockets, and people were pretty excited. And then the word started to get around that the Rockets, because Jeff Van Gundy was the coach, Jeff Van Gundy was staunch against playing rookies. He wanted veterans. He wanted guys he could trust. And so the word got around, even at the draft, where Gay was doing interviews with a Rockets hat, that, look, you've been traded. You're going to Memphis. Shane Battier's going to the Rockets. So it was the worst-kept secret, and word got out, and they started booing in the building. And we were like, oh, God, what have we done? What's going on? You know, and no one saw it coming, because everybody thought at the time, hey, Rudy Gay's going to be a hell of an addition. But Van Gundy was a guy that just didn't see playing. So looking at it now, in retrospect, right move made? Who would you rather have, Rudy Gay, Shane Battier?
Probably Rudy Gay.
Would you?
You don't think so? You don't think
so? I was against it at the time, and I was with you. I would have said Rudy Gay because he was athletic, a high flyer, out of UConn, had a lot of ability. But Rudy Gay's career has just been to me. It hasn't been great.
And I think slightly overrated. Slightly.
Yeah. I mean, longevity, he's still playing in the league, so good for him. But I don't think he's ever done anything. I think when you talk about what this Rockets team needed and what they got out of Shane, and I talked about it to some degree, he was the stopper. Everybody thought he literally was it annoyed Kobe because he was called the Kobe stopper. But he would guard Kobe. He would guard everybody's best player. You know, he was, like I said, smart, intelligent player. Loved the way he could knock down the open three. And I think that he fit that Rockets team so well that as
would
much
he be
as
a good
maybe
coach for this team. Because he is an analytics guy, isn't he?
Now, he knows the game. And maybe we could find out if he ever has any aspirations of coaching. But you know, to me, do I think he could be a good coach? Yes. Do I think he wants to be a good coach? I don't think he wants to coach. I think he kind of would probably prefer maybe the front office. We'll find out maybe, because, look, I just know that in all aspects of knowing the game of basketball, Shane knows it. And he could do it. And I would never doubt him in that regard. But I don't think, like, right now for this team, he's ready to coach this team. But I do know that, I mean, he's got the ability of, and knowledge of the game and grasps of analytics and film study and all that other stuff that he could, I mean, he could do some good for somebody.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's clear. You could tell he's smart just when he starts talking. You just tell by the way he's, you know, he's so articulate. So definitely looking forward to that in about, what, 30 minutes, 35 minutes from now?
Yeah. Yep. Sometime in the 3 o'clock hour, we'll get him in. So that's going to be good. He'll join us. I did want to bring up some of the elements that we haven't yet talked about in terms of the last dance. So we can get to that. We've got Steve Kerr talking about what's coming up this week or this weekend in episodes 7 and 8, which the trailer has already shown is a practice fight between Steve Kerr and Michael Jordan. Kerr's got comments about that. And a guy that has been extremely good to me in my life, Craig Hodges, who was on those Bulls teams. But for a lot of reasons, he thinks he was blackballed from the NBA, from the documentary, and otherwise. He's got some comments on some of the episodes we've already seen. We'll get to those as well. So lots of things to get to in the second half of the show. Hang tight with us. We are Nick and Joel, or Nick and Dick, or whatever you want to call us. Two-thirds of the usual suspects, ESPN 97.5.
G'day, Sam Windsor from the Houston Sabercats here. Rugby's simple. Make tackles, hit rucks, score tries. Almost as simple as using the app. Stream ESPN 97.5 from anywhere, even down under.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
Hey, 90 of the books, 90 still to go. Here comes the second half of the show. It's Nick and Joel in the ESPN family of hosts. Before we do a whole kind of a shakeup of the schedule from day to day, we are going to just flow through the rest of the week. And we got a lot of the sorrow and tears out of the way yesterday, and we're moving forward. Nick and I have talked several times about just getting this thing going in the right direction to keep you guys entertained. So hopefully we've done that in the first half of the show. So we got plenty more to get to. I mentioned before the break that the whole Last Dance Michael Jordan documentary, which is now, not surprisingly, the number one documentary in the history of documentaries, and it took over for Tiger King and all these different things. It's not shocking, but there were a couple of different stories, and one of them that they're using in the trailer is this practice fight between Steve Kerr and Michael Jordan, in which Jordan was eventually thrown out of practice. It got physical. Phil Jackson liked it being chippy to try and get Michael prepared for different situations. He was calling ticky-tack fouls on Jordan. So Jordan said, "You want to foul? I'll show you a foul." He fouled Kerr real hard. Kerr punched him in the chest. So Michael punched him in the eye and got thrown out of practice. Kerr's talked about it in the past, you know, and he said, "Look, my abilities didn't back up my feistiness, but I had a breaking point," kind of like Nick. And he snapped. But he said he's not proud of it. But it's the high level of competition. And look, I'll tell you this. You don't realize it if you're just an innocent sports fan on the outside. But having been where I was for many, many, many years working in the NBA, from the airplane to the practice facility to the weight room, and some of this stuff has been documented. I mean, we can go back to the old Rockets all the way back when we were working in the Compaq Center and talk about amigo Carl Herrera going after people with weights in the weight room. Vernon Maxwell. In the weight room, getting into it. I saw fights at practice. I saw fights on planes. So it's just that, again, there was no social media back then, and these were just things that happened. But when you're doing something like a documentary for a whole year, and you're giving this camera crew access 24/7, and every minute of the day that they're doing something as a team, these things are bound to happen. It's great viewer. It's great for TV. It's great for the viewer. But I don't think that anybody really realized, kind of all that goes into it. And it was a little bit shocking to some people.
Maybe that's something we can ask Shane, because we always talk about how if you want to be an NBA championship team, that you have to play like a team. But I think to a certain extent, and maybe Shane can answer this, it's fair to say that there's got to be some level of competitiveness you know, within the team in order for you to be a really good team. And I think that's kind of, you know, that might have been what happened in that practice. Competitiveness exists in practices, too. It's not just against their opponents and other teams, because everybody's trying to prove themselves.
And, Nick, very interesting point you brought up, and you're right, because I'm going to say I'm going to get into something about the two teams Shane played on. But just to finish up that story, Jordan ended up calling Kerr later in the day and apologized. And he said, in a strange way, it was a necessary step in our relationship, in a weird way, because then it showed Michael that he had the balls to go back at him. He wasn't scared of him or any situation. Kerr felt like, you know, MJ trusted him more after that, was going to pass him the ball more. Obviously, we saw the one big shot that Kerr hit that was part of one of the championship runs. So obviously, it was a big deal. In terms of Shane, you're spot on, Nick, and you should, because I think that's a fantastic point. But it's all based on the roster that you have. Because when you think about Shane's championships, he won them with Miami, and that was a seasoned team full of polished veterans. From Dwayne Wade, Mike Miller as a role player, or Udonis Haslem as a solid bench guy. These are all guys that aren't loose cannons. They're not kind of rough and rough around the edges. At Ray Allen, LeBron James, Dwayne Wade. Sure, you had the Birdman, but even the Birdman knew, if I don't stay in my place and stay in my lane, there's too many guys in this locker room that aren't going to tolerate it, let alone Pat Riley and Eric Spoelstra and the culture that the Heat have. We think about those Shane Battier Rockets teams. Ron Artest, front and center. There's a dude you didn't know from minute to minute, and I worked around him and with him. Ron was a great dude. He was one of the nicest guys you're going to meet, but no one could see it coming when he flipped that switch. And once it was flipped, look the hell out, because I'm telling you, dude was, when you talk about a brick house, this dude was a rock. He was a Golden Gloves champion back in New York growing up. He was strong as an ox, and he had the mentality of fight, not flight, at all times. And I think that it was a little scary to a lot of guys in that locker room, and that's why I say that stabilizing force, like a guy like Shane Battier and some of the guys we had on that team, was huge.
Yeah. I mean, when I first saw him getting angry, I immediately thought to myself, wow, I didn't expect that from Ron Artest. Now, I don't know what a nice guy looks like, but when I would see him on TV, I'm like, Ron Artest looks like a nice guy. Just his cadence, just the way he spoke, you know, he just seemed like a nice guy. And then I realized, yeah, he had a temper, a little bit of a temper, and he had a switch, as you mentioned. And so I was always shocked. He always looked like a guy to me that kind of got along with everybody until I started seeing some of the brawls he was a part of. And stuff.
Bro, obviously Malice in the Palace is what he's most known for. Let me give you both sides of Ron Artest, okay? Ron Artest, one year for our corporate partner dinner, where you take the highest, most important officials at each of the companies that sponsor the Rockets, and you invite them to this really nice dinner, whether it be at a really nice restaurant or in the building somewhere. The team is all there. Everybody just kind of, you know, kind of getting networks. A lot of times players end up getting endorsements and deals out of it by making friends with some of these CEOs and other people. Well, you know, you strategically put players at each table with each sponsor and all this other stuff. Ron's not there. And everybody's calling around. And he finally answers his cell phone. He's at the gym. So they're like, where are you? And he goes, oh my God, I totally forgot. He hauls ass. Everybody's dressed to the nines. Suits, ties, whatever. He hauls ass from the gym over to the building, walks right in. He's got Sacramento Kings sweatpants on, a t-shirt, and a light jacket. Everybody else is in suits. They're like, you're at this table here. He bought his entire table wine. He stayed late. He talked to everyone and was the nicest guy on the planet. And I think so many people appreciated that. And because of the balance in the palace and all that other stuff, never would have guessed that he was going to be that kind of guy. Okay? So there's the good side. The other side of Ron Artest, when you talk about that switch that can be flipped, there have been times, and I'm not going to say who he was after and what he was doing, but there are times when he got into it with people on the court. One of the things about Ron Artest was, as most guys say, it's over when it's over on the court. Some guys will, you know, always do the whole barking and more bark than bite, say, I'll meet you in the parking lot, I'll meet you in the tunnel, I'll meet you outside the locker doors. Ron got into it a couple times, and one in particular, in which he not only wasn't done when he got off the floor, he was asking for the address of the player because we were on the road. And he wanted to know the exact address and then directions and what cab or hotel vehicle could get him there because he was going to finish it. And it took all of our basketball staff and others to talk him out of it, and it was not easy.
That's hilarious. I always wanted to be a part of these discussions, man. I always wanted to work for a team and kind of be a part of it. It's just because the reality is it's so easy to overlook the fact that they're just human. Like, you know what I mean?
Man.
Like, they have their own personalities. They have their own needs, their own wants, their own passions outside the sport of basketball. It's just funny to me.
Well, and it's kind of like Travis Johnson said when we used to do the show the one time when he said, you know, and he was specifically saying about in college, but it's also true in the pros. You have a locker next to a guy, and you, in the case of an NBA player, you just know he's making, you know, a great living now. But you don't take into consideration what this player has been through and what he's gone through from the time he was a kid and wherever he grew up and whatever environment he was in, all the way through getting to the end result of being in a professional sport. So because you don't know that, you don't know his background, you don't know his trigger, you don't know what he, you know, how many people have mistreated him or been mean to him or if he was fighting or, you know, fighting for survival. And so if you don't take that into consideration, you could put yourself in a really tough spot because even though the money and the income level changes, in a lot of cases, the player, the background, the experiences, and the psyche don't change. And that's what you have to be aware of.
Yeah. No question. I mean, that's cool. That's the reason why it's going to be great to have Shane Battier on coming up in the third hour, because he's going to be able to add perspective to all those things when he comes on. So very much looking forward to that.
And I think I've told you this before, too, when I talked about the Golden Gloves and the boxing part of Ron. But we had set up when we first got him, we had set up after practice one day, and he finally agreed to do it. He was going to do a sit-down with Worrell, and we staged it over the practice court, and it was great. And really, really open, candid conversation. And at the end of it, because I had set up all the background on it and everything like that, I was like, Ron, we appreciate it, man. It's good. You're going to look great in this piece. It's going to be fantastic. And I just slapped him on the shoulder. Nick, I'm going to tell you something right now. It's like when you take your bare hand and slap it against a brick wall. That dude was so strong and just, I mean, physically just like powerful that I hit him. I was like, oh, my God. I mean, and then that's why I started asking our PR department and getting more of the background on the Golden Gloves and the boxing and I'm like, no wonder why dude was not afraid of anybody. I mean, I'd bet on him in a lot of, we're talking about who would fight who right now and who could hold their own. I'd bet on Ron Artest more times than not. He could hold his own with a lot of people.
So I always bring up Kevin Willis because I think it's funny how much body fat he had, but was he stronger than Kevin Willis, would you imagine, or no?
Well, and the difference in that is Kevin Willis and I think Charles Oakley were in the finals for, they had a bench press competition in the NBA one year, and both of them were doing like 500 pounds. But Charles Barkley used to call Kevin Willis T-Rex because he had the body of a dinosaur, but yeah, I mean, but powerful as a dinosaur, but his arms were so short that you figure if you're doing a bench press and your arms are short, it takes a lot less motion to push the bar up. So I think there's a huge difference when you talk about weight room strong and you talk just country strong, as they call it. And Ron was country strong, but he did lift weights. But again, the two sides of Ron, he did that interview. He was fantastic and couldn't have been nicer. There were other times where he'd get done with practice, sit down on all the media's in there, male and female, cameras, microphones. He would sit down on the floor and everybody would want to talk to him. And before he'd do the interview, he took his shorts off. So now he's sitting there in like compression shorts and they'd take his shirt off and he'd be like, you guys ready? And there's a lot of people looking around feeling uncomfortable just because they're like, how far is he going to go with this undressing thing? And why is he doing that?
It's hilarious. It's hilarious.
That's who Ron Artest was. And look, people forget about that, but that was the whole thing. We're in the playoffs, too. Remember, they had a legit chance to beat the Lakers. They lost in seven because Yao got hurt. But that was a pretty solid Rockets team that had a chance. Because if they had beaten the Lakers, you know, I think it was Denver in the Western Conference Finals that the Lakers beat to get to the finals. Rockets could have been a finals team that year.
Maybe Ron Artest was just like Derek Lewis. He just, you know, his balls were hot, so he just wanted to take off.
It's possible, man. It is legitimately possible. Yeah. So maybe we can talk to Shane about that too, because that was a team that actually could have made the final.
How his balls get thought? Like, what are you talking
about? No, no. The fact that if Yao doesn't get hurt, and that they could have gone a lot further.
Yeah, that's coming up. Not too long from now.
We're not going to talk balls with Shane Battier. The Heat PR department wouldn't look at
that
too kindly.
Great radio, just saying.
Well, you bring it up, Nick. Let's see how it goes. And I can assure you the Heat PR department will have a phone call to make. We are rolling through hour number two of the three-hour show. So before we get to Shane Battier, we still have more, and you guys can participate. Something on your mind you want to get off your chest? 713-780-3776, HRNP listener line. Call, text, or hit us up on Twitter. Nick and I will be back with more ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5.
We'll be right back after this break.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
Back on The Suspects, final segment of the 2 o'clock hour. We take you all the way up until 4. Blitz takes you till 7, ESPN 97.5. It's me and Nick the rest of the week. As we continue to roll on a lot of different topics, a good friend of mine that has some insight into the NFL, and we can touch on the NFL schedule is released tonight, by the way.
Right.
So they're making it a huge production. You can bang on the NFL all you want, but they're capitalizing on being the only game in town running nationwide. They are getting the pub so they're going to make it a 3-hour experience when they release the schedule, but a lot of the dates for a lot of the teams are leaking out. One that I know for sure, and I don't know if they're going to play it, but boy, I certainly hope that they will. Week 3, Texans will be on Thursday Night Football as they host America's team, the Green Bay Packers. I hope they play that game.
America's team, we're calling it, huh?
Oh, we've been calling that forever. Okay. You can't be America's team and be the Cowboys and haven't sniffed the playoffs in 20 years.
Whatever. At Pac-Man Joel, Cowboys.
That's
fan.
Fine. Let it fly. I don't care. I've said it forever. I'm not going to go back on it now. So we'll get to some of the NFL shenanigans leading up to that tonight. But most part, everybody just wants to see who they're playing, when they're playing. And the rumor is that they're going to try. They've gone in and restructured the schedule so that all of the divisional games are more backloaded. So if they do have to cancel games early in the season, that it doesn't affect the fact that the main crux of everybody's schedule is they got to play their divisional games, so you can figure out seedings and who would win the division, things like that. So that's the rumors anyway. We'll see how the schedule comes out when it gets out tonight. But that's on the agenda, so just mark your calendar for that tonight. And if you have nothing else to do, there's going to be plenty of television centered around all that with the release of the schedule. So I thought I'd throw that out.
Yeah, I love how everybody has. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how accurate some of these reports are. You know, you see these sources about particular games. You know, like the Cleveland beat writer, for example. He's confirmed that the Cleveland won't play Dallas Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving Day.
Yeah. The Bears reporters have like 2/3 of their schedule out. They figured out. I saw that. I saw a lot of teams that are, you know, obviously that always is the case. A lot of stuff leaks out with scheduling when they're trying to get whether the building and the TV crew and all the different things that they're trying to do and making sure that certain games should be, you know, on certain dates. People find out.
Texans,
as we all know.
Texans at Chiefs, huh? Are you going to be
opening game?
I love that. I mean, I'm looking forward to it, even though I don't, you know, feel too confident about this team and with the roster as it sits. And everybody has their reservations, or a lot of people have their reservations about Bill O'Brien. But I like how it's the very first game. I like that. I like opening week.
I'll tell you what. If you're going to catch the Super Bowl champs, the best time to do it is in week 1.
I'm not mad at that.
Because, yeah, I'm with you. Because, you know, as they get kind of into practice mode and get back to business and get a couple games under their belt, they're going to be better as the season gets longer. So I'm with you. I'm totally fine. Look at what happened with the Saints game last year, and the Saints were a hell of a team, and the Texans went to the Superdome, and no one gave them a chance. They actually had every chance in the world to win that game. So you're absolutely right. If you're going to play the Chiefs, play them in week 1.
Yeah, I'm okay with it. I mean, it's obviously it's a team that Because a lot of people, unfortunately, grade NFL teams like through like the first three or first four games. They think it's absolutely telling. And to a certain extent, it absolutely is, right? It's telling as to where your team might be going over the course of 16 games. And sometimes it absolutely lies to you. And the Texans were a perfect example of it because we knew how they started off last year or the year before last, where they had a really bad start and then went off to have nine games in a row to be won. So I don't know. I mean, I would like to get that game out of the way if I'm a Texans fan, and then maybe play some middle of the pack teams in week two or three. But that remains to be seen, as the official schedule will not be out until Thursday night. Tonight, that is.
Tonight, yeah.
Yeah.
So, other NFL news: Jadeveon Clowney. It was rumored to be down to two teams: Seattle, his team of last year; Titans, a team in the Texans division interested. Now it might be the Texans, the Titans ball game to do whatever they want, because Seattle now says chances of him coming back unlikely. Not that it can make Bill O'Brien look a whole hell of a lot better, but it may make the trade look a lot better in knowing that you didn't get as much as you wanted in return. But from a Seattle perspective, maybe it was kind of already an unwritten discussion that he wasn't going to be back. So maybe that's why he didn't get, at least from Bill O'Brien's perspective, he can hang his hat on that and go, they knew he wasn't going to sign there long term, so they weren't willing to give up as much as everybody thought we should have gotten for him. I don't know, but it looks like Seattle is out now, and now, unless another team gets involved, the Tennessee Titans may be his destination.
I saw a clip. Your boy Mark Berman was putting up tweets about it, and I saw a clip, a clip of an interview that Clowney did.
And he's working out here.
Did you get a sense from his tone that he's more humble, or did you feel like, no, he's still trying to get paid? Do you feel like he's perhaps a little more desperate now, considering where his leverage may or may not be?
I'm going to say this. You never know with a player in the situation that he is trying to get a contract, because everybody can play the game. So he's working out here locally in town at Plex, where a lot of the football players and pro athletes work out. I think it's four days a week he's working out here. Berman caught up with him. And I think I want to believe that he's matured, because we've already talked about on this show that, you know, there's a lot of stories out there about his inabilities and unwillingness to practice, about milking injuries, going to casinos instead of road games, you know, getting penalties while in street clothes on the sidelines during road games, all these different things. You want to believe that he turned the corner, he's matured, and he's better. But you just don't know because of the circumstances. If he was doing and saying all those things and he had 3 years left on a five-year deal, I'd be like, that's what you want to hear. But to your point, when you see the soundbite in that set of circumstances, you can't convince me, because he may be just trying to get paid and get as much money as he can by doing and saying all the right things and playing the game.
Yeah, you have to. He's going to have to learn that. Or, I mean, I think it's just the fact that it's so tempting if you're an athlete to just kind of say, hey, look, man, I know they said they wouldn't pay this, but I'm not. Tell them I'm not taking anything less. It's just so easy to do that because agents get paid so much money. And so you expect them to work the hardest for you, especially if they're representing you. I don't know if that's what's happening with Jadeveon Clowney, but I think at some point, you know, the agent has to have that hard discussion and say, look, this is what's on the table for you in terms of offers. This is probably how we could grade the leverage that we have against other teams in terms of contract negotiations. Let's be real about this situation. You're obviously an asset. People want you on your team, but they just don't want to overpay you. You know, let's be realistic about what we can get in terms of an offer.
Think about it, Nick. It's the Dallas Keuchel situation all over again, because the agent is probably filling him with all these grandiose ideas about what he's going to end up getting paid when he enters free agency. But it takes two teams to tango to get in a bidding war and to push the price up, as well as stats and performance that lead you to believe a team's going to give you that money. If you're Tennessee right now, until you tell me and prove to me there's another team involved in this, I'm starting to scale back my offers to you, because I realize I'm competing against myself. And his stats don't – we've said this time and time again on this show. His stats don't come close to the equivalent of the guys that he wants to be paid like that he was in the same draft with, Aaron Donald and Mack of the Bears. Khalil Mack and Aaron Donald, and we've gone over the numbers on this show, he wasn't even close to them in every aspect, but he wants to be paid like them, and he's not going to be. And now, because of what we just said in terms of the teams interested and what's out there, the numbers are going to start going down. It's like Keuchel. The agent can tell you all these different things of what you're worth, but But unless teams are willing to tango and play with that kind of dollar figure, then you got to take what they give you. Keuchel was forced to take a one-year deal with the Braves midway through the season.
Right, he had to. He had to.
And he luckily enough parlayed it into a multi-year deal with the White. I still don't think he got what he was told he was going to get, but at least he got a multi-year deal from the White Sox. You don't know what clown he's going to get.
And I think that's what NFL teams are doing. They're looking at Aaron Donald and other guys, and they're looking at stats, and they're looking at the intangibles and the tangibles, and they're saying, look, he's you know, kind of a middle of the pack, maybe above average guy at that position. Why pay him that much? I mean, I saw a quote on ESPN by the general manager, John Schneider, saying, look, we took a run at it, and he wasn't in a position to make a move. Now, you can look at that quote in a million different ways. But the way I perceive it sometimes, we took a run at it, is that you really tried to get this guy on your team. You didn't just make him an offer, and if he didn't want to make, you know, if he didn't take that offer, you didn't just give up on him. You really took a run at him and really tried to sign him. But what I think teams are doing is they have a set number as to what they're willing to play a particular player.
Sure.
And they give them that number, and sometimes they're stuck on that number, and they don't want to veer from it in any way, shape, or form. So Clowney might have gotten an offer and said, you know what, I'm just going to say no to this because you never say yes to your first offer. I don't want to be too easy. And then Seattle's like, you know what, we're moving on.
But the bigger difference too, Nick, is how do you get to that number? Because each side has their own analytics to get to that number. From a team perspective, they're going to take comparables. So they're going to take your stats, games played, and all that kind of pertinent information and compare it to other guys in the league with similar age, similar skill set, to say, okay, the market should be here. He and his agent are going to take it with, he was drafted in the same draft class as these guys. He should be comparable to these guys from a financial standpoint. And they're going to want, especially in Clowney's case, they're going to want to poo-poo a little bit and push aside the actual numbers and think about the fact that, oh, they held him back and he was a little hampered by injuries. But when he plays a full 16-game season for you, he's going to be equally as good as these two guys he was in the same draft class with, and that's just not the case.
But if he's asking for $21 million and then he reduced it to $17 or $18 million, that tells me when he was asking like an average of $21 million, that he was probably getting offers not just $3 or $4 million less, you know, probably $6, $7, $8, even potentially $10 million less than what he wanted. So that has to say something. The fact that he reduced what his request was by $3 or $4 million means teams are probably not paying anywhere close to that $21 million mark that he wants. And that's just, you know, that's just the game that he's going to have to play until he gets as much money as possible. I just don't think he's going to get the money he wants. And I think that's the consensus. I mean, you got to put numbers like Aaron Donald. You got to be healthy. You got to stay on the field. And for a while, that was at one point he was going to be labeled the B word because the bust word, because he was just not
healthy. B-word you were talking about. Look, he's a physical specimen, right? And I think no one cashed in more. He had a great college season his final year at South Carolina, but the whole hit he put on the Michigan running back.
Oh, that did so much.
Just put him on the map, right? Yeah. So that was and he had a couple of moments like that with the Texans, but they were few and far between, and obviously that was the whole strife between Bill O'Brien and Brian Gain, and that caused not only Clowney to be sent out of town, but O'Brien to get rid of Gain as well. So he's been, you know, front and center with a lot of different issues with the Texans. But at some point, if you're Clowney and his agent, you're going to have to bet on yourself. He thought he was doing it this year, and if he had a good year, then he would parlay it into a multi-year deal. Now, if you don't like the offers you're getting, you're just going to have to find the best spot for you for one season and do it all over again so you can go back through free agency and have better numbers and more games on the field and be able to hopefully get someone to want to pay you more than one team that want to pay you. And I don't know if he's going
to
do that.
Yeah, he's going to have to go through the process, and I still don't think he's going to get the number he wants, but it's going to be interesting to see what his agent and he can pull out in terms of a deal. But, yep.
So a text message said, Nick's the new numbers guy. Okay, Nick, well, take that title and run with it.
I'll just get my spreadsheet ready so I can be like the great
color-coded, would you please?
Yeah.
That'd be fantastic. Okay. Yep, Shane Battier coming up next to start the third hour of the show. Stay tuned for that and a whole lot more right here at ESPN 97.5.